Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. I am Eleanor Mermelstein. I am with my partner, Sylvia Busis. We are interviewing Saul Weisberg at the United Jewish Federation Building on Thursday, June 20, 1985. In our last interview, Saul, you brought us up to date to about 1960. You had mentioned the Senior Citizens Housing Committee coming into being then. Would you like to start with that?
No, as a matter of fact, I would prefer to discuss some other aspect of the activities in which I was involved, and at some future date cover the activities of the development involved in the development of housing for the elderly, which covered a period of 25 years, really. I would like to talk about the development and operation of the Pittsburgh Jewish Chronicle, if that's acceptable to the two of you.
Certainly.
Before I do that, though, I want to put on the record one statement, and that is that, as you probably have already noticed, I talk pretty consistently about myself and very possibly am projecting an image of what might be called unilateral decision-making by me, and that is, of course, an incorrect image. Although my influence varied from program and project, sometimes being very great, sometimes not being so great, on all occasions there was involvement certainly by other professionals and by lay people in arriving at decisions and in establishing policy. And it would be inaccurate and incorrect for me to foster some other image or perception. I think that's very important that I state that. Having said that, I'll now talk about how important I was at the Chronicle. Actually, the Chronicle, I think, if I remember rightly, was established in Pittsburgh, I believe, in 1963. Over the years, prior to 1963, on the whole, what is called the American Jewish Press did not have a good reputation in this country. There were privately owned newspapers in most of the larger Jewish communities. When I say newspapers, without exception, they of course were weeklies. And most of them were relatively small, not very responsible in terms of how they conducted themselves and their sense of responsibility to Jewish community and to accuracy and to fidelity. To a large extent, they made their money, and they made money by selling particularly New Year ads to non-Jewish individuals and businesses. There were some privately owned newspapers that I think could be said to have better images and to, on the whole, be accepted as reasonably decent newspapers. Nevertheless, there was great dissatisfaction among Jewish communities, organized Jewish communities around the country, about the medium of communication to the Jewish community. Even the better privately owned newspapers reached only a very small segment of the Jewish community. So that federations, or the organized Jewish community, but the federations kept dealing with the question of whether it would be feasible to develop or to obtain a weekly newspaper which somehow or other could reach all or almost all of the families or individuals in a particular community and reach them responsibly and offer decent interpretation of ongoing events and promote Federation activities and so forth. First large community to undertake this was Philadelphia. In sometime in the 40s, Philadelphia bought a newspaper and issued a weekly American Jewish newspaper called the Philadelphia Jewish Exponent. It was made available to, I think in Philadelphia, all the subscribers with $10 or more, if I remember rightly. This was the first. It was extremely successful, particularly financially. It was lock, stock, and barrel, an arm of the Federation, and made no real pretense of being an independent newspaper, and I'll refer to this issue later. As a matter of fact, the Public Relations Department of the Philadelphia Federation really operated the newspaper. Philadelphia has an extremely large Jewish population. I don't know whether the two of you are aware of the fact that this, Sylvia's indicating that she is.
No, I'm not.
At that time, Philadelphia was said to have some 330,000 Jews. And this meant that the circulation of the newspaper was very large, and it was a prosperous, relatively speaking, Jewish community. And therefore, the newspaper was very attractive to the advertisers, and the Exponent became extremely successful. And in the 50s, began to make the proud boast, I didn't think it was a very wise boast, began to make the proud boast that it was the largest single contributor to the Philadelphia campaign. They were siphoning off its profits and making pledges and using them as payments to the Federation campaign. Years later, this became a tax problem, and the Philadelphia Exponent eventually had to make a very large payment to the Internal Revenue Service, but that obviously is a separate story. Newark, somewhat later, the Newark Jewish community, I should say, somewhat later, followed Philadelphia and established its own newspaper. So that by the late 50s and early 60s, Pittsburgh began to give consideration to undertaking a purchase of the existing privately owned newspapers and issuing its own Federation purchase, but not necessarily Federation-controlled newspaper. The principal movers in this attempt or consideration were Bob Hiller, of course, who was at that time, as you know, executive director. I don't think he was executive vice president yet, executive director of the Federation. Herman Feinberg, who I think at that time was already president of the Federation. He was the successor to Lewis Kaplan, by the way. And finally, Joe Feldman, who was an advertising, who was the owner and operator of an advertising agency in Pittsburgh community, well known and active in the Federation, particularly in the community relations and communications end. At the time in Pittsburgh, there were two privately owned newspapers. One was owned by the Alter family, and the other was owned by Hal Gall. The Alter family's newspaper was the Jewish Criterion and dated back all the way, I think, to the 90s, 1890s probably. Anyway, dated way back. Al Gollum had worked, I think, for the Criterion at one point. It finally split off and established his own competitive newspaper, I think, in the 30s. Both these newspapers were in existence.
What was the other paper called?
I'm sorry, the Jewish Outlook. Both these newspapers were in existence. Al Gollum appeared to be making an adequate living out of the Outlook, The Criterion was not really making money, but the family that was operating it was able to sustain it because they owned another newspaper in Baltimore, and on the whole, they were able to keep it going. Neither part of the paper, as far as Federation was concerned, was performing a useful function by the standards of Federation. They both had very small circulations. The news that they offered was very limited. There was no interpretive material. And, well, I won't characterize which of the two newspapers, but certainly at least one of them was stressing very heavily the promotion of New Year's ads, which we thought was detrimental to the image of the Jew and the Jewish community and the non-Jewish community, because, much I hate to say it, it had a flavor almost of a certain kind of blackmail. And a lot of people obviously didn't like this. So explorations were begun with the owners of the two newspapers about the possibility of Federation buying the two newspapers and replacing it with a single newspaper. There were quite a few very interesting and difficult issues that had to be resolved. First issue was the question of whether such a newspaper could be financially stable, or put it differently, whether it would, such a newspaper would create, I think this is a more precise way to state it, would create a financial problem for the Federation, which would not be worth whatever the benefits might be to the Federation in the way of communication and so forth. And involved in that particular issue was the question, number one, of what it was going to cost to buy the two ongoing newspapers, plus what would be the income of the new newspaper. A second issue, of course, was should the newspaper and could the newspaper be independent? If it were independent, would it be critical of the Federation? If it were critical of the Federation, would this be good or bad, and so forth? I guess number three, derivative of that, of course, was the whole question then of the structure of the newspaper and how would it relate to Federation and so forth. On the first issue, question of finances, when we talked to the owners of the two newspapers, it soon became clear that the purchase price as asked was going to be very difficult for Federation to meet. And I won't go into the history of the long negotiations. They were long negotiations and so forth. But eventually, the Federation did buy the two newspapers at really quite an outrageous price. The total price was over $300,000, of which $100,000, if my memory serves me right, went to the Jewish Outlook, along with an agreement that Al Golem would continue in the employ of the new newspaper.
And were these papers both bought at the same time?
Yes, they had to be. Other newspaper, the Jewish Criterion, was purchased for a price of $200,000 plus an agreement that a certain contribution would be made to the Federation for a certain number of years. I remember the negotiations very well because I was involved in them. I remember very well negotiating with Herschel Silverstein, who's Florence Reisenstein's brother. And Herschel was a very firm negotiator.
For whom did he negotiate, Saul?
Everyone.
For whom did he negotiate?
For the Alter family. That is the Jewish criteria.
Was he their attorney, or
no,
was he?
No, there was a relationship there. Mrs. Alter No, I don't really remember quite the relationship. I think Mrs. Alter, Geraldine Jenkinson was an Alter, and I think Mrs. Alter may have been a Silverstein, I think. I'm quite sure that Herschel was, now I think about it, the uncle to Geraldine Jenkinson. Anyway, now, one of the alternatives that was presented to the Federation at the time, by the way, was just undertaking the publication of the newspaper without purchasing the other two. And most people agreed that if the Federation did this, that they would probably put the other two out of business. And there was very strong feeling on the part of some of the directors and so forth of the Federation that this would be something the Federation could not undertake. And I remember very vividly Sam Horlick actually saying that he would cease contributing to the Federation if the Federation undertook to do this. This, by the way, has been an issue in other communities. That is, when the Federation, when it has difficulty purchasing other newspapers with which it's completely dissatisfied, whether it's appropriate for the Federation to issue its own newspaper, even though it means so much detriment, so to speak, to the existing privately owned newspapers. Anyway, in Pittsburgh, it was settled rather early that the Federation would not issue its own newspaper, and that the only condition on which the Federation would issue a weekly newspaper would be if the other two newspapers ceased to operate. And as I say, finally, the Federation did buy the two newspapers for $300,000 to be paid out over a lengthy period of time. I think it was 15 years, if my memory serves me right.
What year was that, Saul?
I think it was 1963. On the question of the organization and the independence of the Federation, that proved to be a very difficult issue. By the way, let me go back to one step to say that, number one, that in purchasing newspapers for $300,000, the purchase price, the monthly or yearly payments, which I think extended over a period of 15 years, was built in as what might be called one of the charges that the new newspaper would have to meet out of its revenues. And we projected a revenue schedule for that newspaper that some people thought was highly speculative. And indeed it was, although today newspapers in, I think, as far as I know, relatively good financial situation, the $300,000 has been paid off. And although it was, as I said earlier, an outrageous price on almost any basis, I happen to believe that it was a worthwhile payment in the sense that it was the only way that the Chronicle could be established. And the Chronicle, although it leaves a lot to be desired from my viewpoint, nevertheless, it's been a very useful and important factor in Pittsburgh Jewish life. Going back to the structure of the newspaper, it was agreed that the newspaper should have its own board. A lot of question about the nature of the board and how it was going to relate to the independence of the newspaper. There was a great deal of concern about that issue of independence, whether the Federation and existing Jewish communities would be under attack, and whether the newspaper just generally would be responsible or not, and how much coverage it would give to Jewish individuals. And there are a lot of issues which we can talk about if you want. The Sinai agreed that there should be a separate independent board, but built in, and as far as I know, still in existence, was a safety valve, so to speak, in the sense that the nominating committee, which nominates and really selects the members of the Chronicle Board, that nominating committee consists of two representatives from the the Federation, basically the Federation president and somebody appointed by him, and two representatives of the Chronicle board. That's the Chronicle president and the Chronicle, someone else from the Chronicle. So that, on the whole, that has acted as a means of keeping the Chronicle board relatively close to the Federation, although there have been periods, which I'm going to come to in a little bit, I hope, where there has been some very touchy issues that have required discussion between Federation and the Chronicle. But anyway, that was the final solution of the structure. The many ways, the most important issue, perhaps as important, perhaps not as important as the question of the structure of the board, the most important issue was the question of the management, both editorial and financial, of the paper. As far as the financial management is concerned, it was part of the agreement between Al Golem, publisher of the Outlook, and the Federation, that when the new newspaper was to be issued, that Al Golem would become business manager.
Now, he represented the Outlook?
He had been the owner of the Outlook.
Yes.
And part of the deal with him, in which, as I said, Federation purchased the Outlook from him for $100,000. In addition, it was agreed that there would be an employment contract, and he would be the financial, in charge of the financial aspects of the paper. An editor had to be selected, and Al Bloom was selected. I was not part of that selection process. Matter of fact, I wasn't happy about that. Bob Heller and Joe Feldman really carried out that selection, and they employed Al Bloom.
What had been Al Bloom's background? Had he been in newspaper work?
Al Bloom had been a recognized, capable, recognized as a capable reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. For quite a few years. He was Orthodox in his religious background, and I mention that because this became a factor over the years in the attitude that many people had towards the operations of the Chronicle. I'll come up again later, but I'll just say what I'm saying is that many people felt that the Chronicle was slanted or biased in its coverage of these religious matters, biased or slanted towards those undertakings that were sponsored by Orthodox institutions.
Did the Alter family have any part in the new
No, the Alter family was out of it completely. They had nothing to do with the editorial or anything else. All they wanted was the money. As simple as that. However, Al Golem was exactly the opposite. And this led to what, in all the years of experience that I had in Jewish affairs, led to the most bitter personal conflict and controversy that I have seen. And that is the personal controversy between Al Bloom on the one hand and Al Golem on the other. Al Bloom came on the newspaper, committed to the notion, rightly or wrongly, committed to the notion that as editor of the paper, he was in charge of the paper. Al Golem came onto the paper, called the Chronicle, by the way, came onto the paper, committed to the notion that in a sense this was a continuation of the Outlook, and he was not just going to be the business manager, he was going to be the publisher. They both turned out to be extremely strong-willed on this issue, capable of being extremely vindictive, absolutely determined not to give an inch, and openly very, very hostile to each other.
How long did this hostility go on?
Until Al Golan's death, maybe 5 or 6 years after the creation of the Chronicle. I remember almost my first, I think it was my first meeting with Al Bloom, and we went over to the offices of the Chronicle, which at that time might still have been the Outlook offices. We went through the offices with Al Bloom, and there we came to Al Golan's office, and then we came to the office which had been set aside for Al Bloom, which was smaller and had less windows and so forth. And I said to Al Bloom, I said, Al, that time he and I were good friends, the situation changed as years went by. I said to Al, it was my first experience with him, I said to Al, that's a mistake. First thing you should be doing is putting yourself in a position of equality, and it's obvious that Al Golan is projecting an image where he is going to be the superior. Anyway, the two struggled over the next 5 years until Al Golan's death as to who was really going to control the newspaper. And I will say, because I think it requires to be said, that I spent, I don't know how many hours, almost every day, mediating between the two on any number of issues. And I sincerely believe that if it hadn't been for that mediation, that the Chronicle would probably have not been able to continue, or somehow or other, and I don't know how that was possible, because of the Golan contract, the paper would have had to disappear. Problem, I mean, it was necessary to keep the paper going in order to continue to achieve revenue. And it was an extraordinarily difficult thing. It got so bad, and you'll be interested in this, Sylvia, because I don't know how many meetings Eleanor has attended, but I know Sylvia has attended quite a few hundred times. We had one meeting once of the board of the Chronicle where the fury and anger of the two began to be evident, and Al Golan lost control and began to carry on at a great clip, so to speak. And Joe Feldman, who I should have mentioned, the first president, I'll get back to that in a second, and Joe Feldman finally ordered Al Golan out of the room.
Oh, my goodness.
And Al Golan said, you mean you're ordering that? You're ordering me out of the room? And Joe Feldman said, absolutely, I don't want you in this room. And Al Golan got up, and if I remember right, I think he finally left the room. And we said to Joe, you can't do that, John. We looked and so forth. And finally, we went back and got to Al, brought him back into the room, sat him down, and I think he was sort of quiet. But have you ever seen that?
Not only have I never seen it, I don't know how the board functioned while all this was going on.
Board functioned somehow or other. It was quite an extraordinary thing to see some of these. Most of the time it didn't... no, I shouldn't say that. Almost every board meeting, as I remember it, the bitterness would boil up somehow or other. But most of the time it was under a certain amount of control. Part of the problem was really the fact that the board found it very difficult as a board to define really the responsibilities of the two. At the very first meeting, I remember this so very well, at the very first meeting, Carl Adler, who was one of the board members, who knew Al Bloom perhaps, maybe didn't, I don't know, anyway, made a glowing speech about how the editor was to be the captain of the ship, and in full charge, so to speak, of our passage, and indicating, therefore, that Al Bloom was to be in complete control of the undertaking. that horrified me, whose perception was that the board was to be the publisher, and Al Bloom was very clearly to be subordinate to the board and so forth, and here was the board member saying just the opposite. And Al Bloom took that very seriously, and from the beginning felt that he really was the newspaper. From the very beginning, Al believed that he personified, so to speak, the Pittsburgh Jewish Chronicle. And
we have a few minutes on this side. That's not, keep going.
He personified the Pittsburgh Jewish Chronicle, and that on the whole, he had the right, really, to make a determination of what the Chronicle should say and should do, although he did consult, I don't want to go too far in that, he did consult consistently with the president and, of course, reported to the board, and there were board meetings, and the board did make policy decisions, and Joe Feldman, who was a very strong person, did control Al Bloom and Al Golub to a large extent. Joe happened to, fortunately, be very strong as a president and as a person. He did find it very difficult, though, and at one time he wanted me to become, so to speak, the publisher of the